Chapter 10, Seed Start, Monday Morning. "Morning, Sandra," Fox announced as he passed his receptionist on the way into his office. She sat beneath his latest art acquisition, a six-foot-high, Chuck Close portrait of Fox's face. It had been a commission. Close had been reluctant to take on the job, but Fox, determined to have this pricey status symbol, bet his price, and Close couldn't refuse. And there it was, the clear-eyed, close-up of his eyes, nose, mouth, and even his whiskers, staring out at the world. His face on the painting had been broken down into one-inch squares of pixelation, best appreciated from the across-the-long lobby, where the image became recognizable as Fox. It was a testament to how successful and cultured he was, in case anyone needed any more proof. He only wished his white trash parents could see him now. Not that they could or would understand the art or anything else in his life, for that matter. On the white wall behind the two white Barcelona chairs spanned a neon sculpture of his logo, Seed Start, glowing orange across the long white wall. The adjacent wall was orange, with an arrangement of framed covers of Money magazine, featuring Seed Start and the success stories of the companies it had funded. "How was your weekend?" Sandra chirped. "Splendid. You?" "Not great. Alex has a cold again. Actually, I was going to ask if I could leave early today to take him to the doctor. I kept him home from school, and my mother's with him now." Fox held up his hand to stop her flow of words interfering with his serenity. Now he might have to do an extra morning meditation to clear her energy from the room. "Sure, fine, no problem. In fact, with the holiday, why not just take off tomorrow, since we only have a half day on Wednesday?"
"Jerry, thank you. You're the best."
"You're very welcome. Can you please bring me a cup with a double shot of decaf espresso, a glass of water, and some steel-cut oatmeal with fruit and nuts on the side?"
"No problem."
She sprang to her feet. God, the last thing he needed now was to get a cold from some germy little monster transmitted through his mother. Fox shut his office door and sat down at his agronomic chair. He rolled it up to his 10-foot-long burnished aluminum desktop, looking so similar to the finish on his MacBook, with its giant external monitor that they blended in visually, appearing to be one piece. Sandra brought in his coffee and breakfast on a little wooden tray. It held a folded blue-and-white checkered cloth napkin, a lovely flowered bowl with steaming oatmeal in its toppings, and a softly glowing antique silver spoon. There was a small white vase holding a single white rose, just the way he liked it. She set it on his desk next to his computer.
"Here you go," she dimpled.
Fox flashed her a practiced smile, holding his breath inside. He did not dare inhale until she left, and he hoped she hadn't breathed on his food. He considered putting on a face mask next time he passed through the office. When she closed the door behind her, he took hand sanitizer out of his top drawer and sprayed anything she might have touched. He would have to remember to spray disinfectant in the lobby. Next, he lined up a row of vitamins and supplements from the bottles in his desk drawer. He swallowed each capsule with a sip of water, a multivitamin, his omega-3s for joint pain, extra vitamin B for nerves, and D for his bones. There was ginkgo biloba for brain function and garlic for digestion. A man had to take care of himself. Then he opened his email. It was the typical stuff from hotshot startup CEOs hoping to meet in order to request funding, invitations to pitch slams, and meeting requests for the various boards on which he served. He sniffed. All that could wait. More important was the matter of Simon. When he had awoken that morning, he had found the text from Alex saying the Simon problem was resolved. Alex never failed him. It was a relief to know Simon was gone, so the young man certainly wouldn't be talking. Still, there was the small matter of the police questioning concerning his involvement with Simon. The kid was such a mess. Who would have any doubt Simon was the mastermind behind anything suspicious that might turn up? Besides, the cops did not have a single thing that could implicate him. Fox felt satisfied that killing Simon tied everything up neatly. He was certain there was no tracing of anything back to him. He felt lucky he got the Simon business out of the way so he could concentrate on the work at hand. The sale of the virus was going to put him at the top of the food chain.
When it came down to it, Fox, unlike Simon, was a respected member of the community. It had taken him a long time to get there, as if he was one of the Chilean miners trapped underground, clawing himself up through the dirt to the light. Poverty had been his trap, not a caved-in mine shaft, but he had scaled that hole one step at a time. Nobody, not a weaselly little nerd, a nagging wife, or a pesky girlfriend who asked way too many questions, was going to take what he earned away from Jerry Fox. He had laughed at Natalie's voicemail the day she died. They had fucked at Jerry's pied-à-terre, then they lunched at a quiet little bistro, where she had bugged him again about Simon. At lunch, one of the clams on her linguine hadn't opened. Knowing better than to eat it, she slid it to the side of her plate.
"It's me,"
she told his voicemail while calling from her office.
"I'm feeling sick, and at first I thought it might be something that we ate at lunch. Do you feel bad, too? It could be food poisoning, but this is very strange. I'm trying not to panic, but I think I might have been poisoned. Can you help? Jerry, where the hell are you?"
A clam. He had heard from her colleagues how she had collapsed in the ladies' room. Natalie looked hideous. They questioned each other with worried faces. My God, did you see that rash? Could it be contagious? She had no idea how she had been the perfect guinea pig for the lethal virus he had been developing. He prided himself on the economy of eliminating her and testing the product at the same time. After everyone in the building was sent home, men wearing white coveralls, masks, and gloves came onto the floor and fumigated the offices. Steve Hahn, one of the head programmers on Natalie's team, called Jerry Fox. When Fox didn't answer, Steve left a message.
"Hey, it's Steve. I thought you might want to know the test was successful. Natalie was just taken to Mass General in an ambulance."
Now that Simon was dead, there was no way he could be linked to any of that mess. Hahn certainly wouldn't implicate him, since he helped build it. There was still the matter of OMG, which was much more important than his usual venture capitalist bullshit. He typed Kylie Maynard into Google to find out what he could about her. If he had her program now, he wouldn't have to diddle around with Google, but it's all he had right then. The results were disappointing, although a little surprising. He found some of the headlines from Kylie's college ski days, and it turned out she was a serious skier, even hoping to train for the Olympics one day. She had interned at her dad's financial firm before going for her MBA, and she had had another startup before, as some kind of an app that failed just after grad school. He sniffed again, glad she had never approached him for seed money. It was pathetic the way these desperate kids pandered to him. Most of the time, their student projects weren't realistic for the marketplace. He wondered how she had funded it. No matter. What she'd come up with now seemed pretty useful, and he wanted to get his hands on it. It was not the kind of thing he'd want to bring to market. No, he wanted it for himself. He researched the registration for her first business and got the address. Fox loved the peace of calmly sorting out his day and leisurely typed some items into his schedule. First, he'd deal with some of his more urgent emails. Then he would see about Kylie Maynard. The next item needing attention was an email from Emily Wickland, who had been coordinating some meetings in New York. Her expertise was PR, but she had some excellent contacts, including her supposed lover, Bill Reinstadt. She took credit for putting Jerry Fox together with Reinstadt, and they made a good team. Since the Lilly virus was ready, Emily had been helpful in setting up potential buyers. As a couple, they seemed a little tepid to Fox, a little too perfect, as if they performed just for show. Since he had met Emily in person and observed the two of them together, he'd wondered about certain coolness between them. In her photos, she looked gorgeous. In person, she was even more dazzling. If Reinstadt did not appreciate a good woman like her, Fox certainly could. Now that Natalie was out of the way, he was just waiting for the right moment to make his move. Those legs. He could just imagine how he would like Emily to use them. Well, that reminded him of his first order of business, and he punched some numbers into his cell phone.
"This is Emily,"
the sultry voice answered. "Good morning, gorgeous. It's Jerry. Just checking on our meeting.
Yes, it's all set. Maxim is extremely interested. My feeling is he'll meet our price. It will be obvious to see the value after we release the demo.
He sighed. Only a few more days and the power of Lily would be evident to all. He'd have the world at his feet. He'd sell it and disappear. No more Candace, no more demanding entitled twins, no more pathetic startup CEOs hounding him for money, delivering their hopeful little pitches, no more cops. Those monkeys didn't know what the hell they were doing. He was certainly not a criminal, just a guy trying to make a buck and survive. It was the American way. He planned to just vanish without even saying goodbye. He was sure nobody would really miss him, and if they did, what did he care? His new mountainside house overlooking San Miguel was already furnished and waiting. Maria, his knockout Mexican housekeeper, had taken care of it all. Now there was a woman. He couldn't wait to see her. Emily Wickland paled in comparison. Well, everything seemed to be working according to plan. He'd be set, and Reinstadt would have all the money he needed to literally buy his way into the Senate and then onto the White House. There were only a few details to take care of, and everything would be fine.